This is The Beat, a podcast series that keeps you in the know about the latest community policing topics facing our nation.
Hello and welcome. My name is Tanine Bradford, and on behalf of the Cops Office, I'd like to introduce to you Deputy Chief Thurnauer with the East Hartford Police Department. He's here to talk with us today about officer suicide. Chief, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We're very sorry to hear about the loss of one of your officers to suicide. You shared your experience of losing an officer to suicide at the IACP National Symposium, Breaking the Silence of Officer Suicide. Can you please share the story with today's audience?
Sure. The presentation at the symposium was rather lengthy, and I'll do my very best to summarize that presentation, but I want to at the same time try to keep the same emotion that I used, because it's such an emotional subject for all of us. So on March 12, 2013, here in the city of East Hartford, Connecticut, we were having a weekly staff meeting. And the best way for me to really describe what happened is to summarize what one investigator wrote. And I'll quote directly from their report that said, "I heard what I immediately recognized as the sound of a gunshot come from the direction of the investigation main hallway. Members of CID moved quickly into the hallway using tactical approach to look for the origin of the gunshot. We cleared the CID office, sergeant's office, and kitchen area. Officers attempted to clear the north bathroom and found the door unlocked but barricaded. The door was forced open, and once inside, officers located the officer who had an apparent gunshot wound to the head. And so started a miserable day, March day, in my department." And the rest of the symposium dealt with not only how my department and our staff responded to it, but some of the things that we have done to prepare our officers for the advent of this kind of event, and what we've done since to try to prepare not only our officers for the event, but to try to do everything we know how to do to try to keep this from happening again.
As a leader in the organization, how was the situation shared with your department after it occurred, and what impact did it have on your agency?
I think that it's pretty well known in the police circles that news like this travels fairly quickly. So a lot of the informal communication avenues were immediately taken advantage of, cell phones, etc. Because we wanted the information to be accurate, we used our call-out system, and we did send a notice out to everybody in the agency describing what happened, which actually was a pretty difficult task just in itself, because you try to look for the exact right words, you try not to offend anybody, you try to make it so the information is clear to what happened, but without having an edge in it or sounding too objective. So putting together a package to do that, now we sent it to voicemails and we sent it to emails. And then, unfortunately, and of course, there's an awful lot of second guessing sometimes with these, we also sent it to the home of the subject officer. We had already made contact with the family, so that wasn't an issue, but it was a little bit harsh sounding, I think, when the wife of this officer got an email message or a voicemail message in it. It just took away a little bit of the emotional impact that we wanted to have and the caring feeling that we wanted to instill on the part of our officers and in the family of this poor guy and his wife and kids.
Okay, so has your agency done anything differently since that incident to help officers with depression or post-traumatic stress disorder?
I can tell you that prior to this incident, we had a very well-established peer counseling group in our agency. We had sent, I think, all our officers to awareness programs to try to recognize personal characteristics that somebody might display if they were, in fact, some kind of crisis. The challenge is keeping it on the radar screen, and we do our very best here to try to have ongoing training. And every police department does, I think, in lots of different areas. How do we keep this in the mind of everyone who works here, and how do we keep our supervisors appropriately on edge to see those symptoms that we talk about all the time, those reaction to an incident that's a little bit different, or asking for a different assignment or taking extra sick days, and all those things that are key in recognizing that something's going on with an individual. As far as moving forward, we continue to do those classes, and we've sent more and more people to some, I would say, higher level training or trainings we might not have utilized in the past. But again, for us, the real challenge is, even after we send them to class, and now it's a month later or 2 months later or 4 months later, how do we keep it in everybody's mind how important it is and how it's a threat all the time for all of us?
Okay, so based on your experience, what would you recommend to other agencies on handling the aftermath of a suicide and the considerations regarding officers and families?
Well, I can't stress enough, and it sort of fits into some of the comments I've already made, you have to be proactive. These things don't resolve themselves on their own, and it's our responsibility as managers and command staff people, and it filters through the whole organization, certainly not just supervisors, but we have to understand what's going on, recognize symptoms, and get immediate intervention of some sort. And that's going to change from agency to agency. We have to make it really comfortable to talk about. I know that when we go to lineups or briefings or whatever different terms we use around the country, that sometimes it's really uncomfortable to talk about police suicide. It's something we shy away from. We really don't want to deal with all the time. But open, honest communication, really in an informal setting, even just having a coffee, not necessarily just in the formal classroom or lineup sessions, the more we talk about it, the more we're comfortable to discuss it, the easier it's going to be to recognize and get people help. We do have a peer counseling system. We have to make really, really sure that we select those peer counselors carefully. It certainly can't be a popularity contest, and we all know we have some people who may want to step up and be a peer counselor, but may not be the perfect person or the perfect fit in bringing some of that information down through the staff. We first thought that we'd train and give extra training to our peer counselors. What we ended up doing was, though, we trained everybody. In a lot of ways, everybody is a peer counselor here because everybody has those certain relationships that they form with people either that they came on with or they went to the academy with, or you work in a specialized unit together, so you create a bond. So we need everybody to be part of that trained employee to help recognize the different signs and symptoms. And we can't train once either. I know a lot of departments talk about, well, geez, we train all our officers, but so 4 years down the line, do those same skills and observation techniques still, do they last? And is it still a priority? And do we still practice it every day? So not only do we emphasize training everyone, but we want to train everyone more than, and it's hard to really pick a how often, but at least once a year, and maybe a couple of times a year, or maybe once a year and then a couple of less formal sessions to bring it to everybody's attention and keep it really high on the priority list.
Are there any other recommendations or thoughts that you want to share with our audience today as we're closing?
Well, it's interesting that the wife of the subject officer talked to us a great deal afterwards, and she had some really good suggestions. And in policing, sometimes we hear discussions or we hear suggestions from people that aren't sworn and we dismiss them. But let me tell you, we took these suggestions to heart. And I'll just give you an example. It was very important for our officer's wife to think that we as command people, who probably haven't spent as much time on the street as we used to get out there and experience what the guys on the street are experiencing. And I think that is just a fantastic idea. It's been a while since I worked midnights. It's been a while since I got into a verbal or physical altercation on the street. And you sort of lose, without question, you lose your edge and you forget some of the stressors that people go through. Even the fact that I said I haven't worked midnights for a long time. But boy, it seems like yesterday that I was changing shifts every 28 days and I was cursing everybody on the second floor because this was an impossible schedule to keep and my body wasn't adjusting and I felt crummy all the time and my eating patterns were shifted and I couldn't cope with it. We forget that so easily, and it is so important for us as commanders and supervisors to get back and really understand all these things that the guys on the road and girls on the road are going through on a daily basis. And let me share one other thing that was brought to us by the wife of our officer, and she talked about absorbing the emotions of the people that he came in contact with. And I think we all have officers who do this. They go out on the street and just connect subjectively with people in a way that maybe some others who can keep this whole policing profession on a totally objective level, well, everybody can't do that. And some officers who really absorb the emotions of others sometimes react differently than those who can. And we really need to look at each officer as an individual and try to help them through whatever they whatever they're going through as far as stressors on the road.
Very interesting and all important things to share with the audience today. So Deputy Chief Thurnauer, thank you so much on behalf of the COPS office for being with us today and sharing your experience.
It's my pleasure, and I'm hoping the COPS office is going to continue looking into this, and I know that IACP has more scheduled development sessions coming up in the future to deal with the same subject.
The Beat was brought to you by the United States Department of Justice COPS Office. The COPS Office helps to keep our nation's communities safe by giving grants to law enforcement agencies, developing community policing publications, developing partnerships, and solving problems.
The opinions contained herein are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. References to specific agencies, companies, products, or services should not be considered an endorsement by the authors or the U.S. Department of Justice. Rather, the references are illustrations to supplement discussion of the issues.